T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
That ball's crossed to center field. Reyes back. He's got no play. And it's gone. Did you say come back? 8-4.
Middays on the Score.
Well, you can say it. I don't know what it means, but you can say it.
You can say it.
Segment brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR. Let's talk some White Sox with MLB.com's White Sox beat writer Scott Merkin, who is on Twitter at Scott Merkin, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Scott. How are you?
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Wonderfully. Merk, great to talk with you. Cease Day was a joy, I think, for everybody there. How did the young man seem after his debut? I know he mentioned the fastball command was kind of all over the place, but right. The stuff showed, and he looks like a pro.
Yeah, he seemed like he did. You know, after we talked to him, a couple of us went out to Indianapolis back in April to watch him pitch, and obviously far less pressure, and the weather was a little worse then, but aside from that, you know, much less pressure, but the same demeanor. And that's one of the great things you see about him, is he's just a very calm, even-keeled kid. And, you know, James McCann told us after the game that he talked to him and said, hey, you know, the only way you're going to lose this game is if you beat yourself and just, you know, stay under control, command your pitches, and you'll be okay. And the thing is, you can see the stuff is there. As they say, you know, easy 98 miles an hour, which is kind of hard to kind of put together, kind of like jumbo shrimp, I think. But, you know, easy 90-mile-an-hour fastball, good four-pitch repertoire, and you can't teach that. That stuff, that's innate ability. And the rest of the stuff he's going to learn now as he's a part of the rotation, you know, the rest of the season and well beyond.
I was in the outfield for Cease Day, so I went back and watched the tape just to see if everything was moving the way I thought it was. And what I caught on tape was that James McCann had a really nice day behind the plate. He grabbed a couple of strikes for Cease, presented a few strikeouts the right way. I don't know. I mean, how much can you say about what he's done for Lucas Giolito this season and even some other guys, it seems like Aaron Bummer in this White Sox pitching staff?
Yeah, you know, I happened to hear Jason Benetti talking yesterday on the broadcast about how – I think it was either Jason Benetti or radio or TV, one of the broadcasts were talking about how it's a sign that, you know, a lot of the visiting writers came over to talk to James McCann, you know, when Detroit was in town, talk about his great season. And that's one thing. But I saw people, like, from the organization. I saw Kirk Gibson come over there and congratulate James McCann on making the All-Star team and having a great year. And to me, that shows how valued he was in that organization. They didn't keep him around. And he has broken out as one of the, you know, I don't know if surprise stories, but I think great breakout stories in the first half. Lucas Giolito has thrown every pitch he's thrown this year to James McCann. And he gives McCann a lot of credit for his success, you know, in terms of just letting him think about pitching and not worrying about what comes next, because McCann does such great preparation and does such a good job of calling games that it makes it easier for the pitchers to just focus on, you know, basically the simple thing. Well, simple for them. What they have to do is just, you know, throw the ball, throw the certain pitch called. And McCann kind of plays that off and says ultimately it's Giolito who made the change, but he deserves a great deal of credit for some of the development of these young guys too.
As the sample size grows on Dylan Cease, we'll get a better understanding of some of these relative sure. usage percentages on his pitches. But in one game, his fastball was used 54.5% of the time, the curveball 13.9%. I need a higher percentage of curveballs from him. I just do. We now know in baseball it's hard to hit curveballs. We also are seeing umpires in general, I think, doing a better job of calling the curve up in the zone for a strike. I think Steve Stone has noted that. He always, as a former curveballer, he always used to complain about it when the strike zone drifted lower, how you'd never get that call. I see it a lot now. I would like to see that pitch, which I think is a special, you know, 90th percentile level pitch, simply thrown more.
Well, it's kind of interesting because they went more to the curveball as the game, you know, progressed on what day was it now? Wednesday, right? Today's Friday. You know, and he, because his fastball command was just not as sharp as he wanted it to be. And I think the other pitch, Dan, to look at is the change. And that's something that a lot of these guys, especially these elite guys, don't need to use a lot. Mm-hmm. in the minors, I can still go back to when Chris Sale came up and, you know, Kenny Williams was talking about how great his fastball was and the slider is, you know, probably, you know, the best in the game, if not one of the best pitches in the game. And he said, but wait until you see his changeup. Wait until he masters that pitch. It's as good as anything else he has. And I think that's going to be the same for Cease. Yeah, as, you know, Ricky Renteria described, it's a hammer. It can knock players over, and it did that against Detroit on Wednesday. But I think working everything and including that, you know, once he gets the master, that change too is going to make him that much more well-rounded on the mound.
What's the timeline on Tim Anderson's return?
You know, it's interesting. It seemed I wasn't in Boston when he hurt himself, but I saw, you know, him walk off the field, being helped off the field. And if you remember, it's the same sort of injury that Jimenez had. And when Jimenez was helped off after he went down, you know, crashing into the fence, chasing a home run ball against the Tigers, as a matter of fact, he looked like, okay, that if that's not a season-ending injury, it's going to be, you know, 2-3 months before we see him back. And, you know, he made great progress. Tim was moving around yesterday. He was playing catch yesterday. I saw him come field, asked him how he was doing. He said he felt good. So I think it's, you know, more along the lines of what they said, which is going to be a month. And, you know, I don't think, you know, they're not going to certainly rush him back. But once again, I think it's an unfortunate injury, but they may have dodged a bullet in the fact that it's not as bad as what high ankle sprains can end up being. And the same thing happened with Jimenez. And Jimenez had a good quote to us when we were talking to him after the game they lost to the Twins this past weekend. And he said he told Tim Anderson that, you know, when you come back, it's going to be sore. It's still going to hurt a little bit. But once you play through it, you know, it'll get better and you'll get back to your normal self. And you've seen that in Jimenez's results, I think. As he's gotten healthier from that injury, he's been hitting the ball better.
How did does the Giolito reclamation inform the way the team looks at the current struggles of Reynaldo Lopez?
Well, I think it's an example of faith can be rewarded. You know, I mean, Giolito himself has talked about, I mean, you know, he doesn't need to hide from it. The stats were there. It was a bad season last year. You know, he was second in all of baseball and led the American League in walks. I think he had the most earned runs allowed of any pitcher in baseball last year, and they stuck with him because they could. You know, this was not a team that was going anywhere last year. It was year two of the rebuild that they were doing what they were supposed to do last year, and that's, you know, acquiring the critical mass still and letting these young guys develop. To Giolito's credit, and that's what the point has got to be made with Lopez too, is he did not let that season define him for a second. As soon as, you know, the rest time ended after 2018, he set his sights on 19 and not only refocused mechanics and everything else, but mindset. You know, he's better planned. He says he's working smarter now. He has a better 5-day plan, you know, between starts and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, the faith was rewarded, but the player has to do it too. And I think Lopez will, and Lopez was very demonstrative through Billy Russo yesterday in saying that, you know, it's going to be a different pitcher the second half. He said he already was talking to guys when he came out of the game yesterday about things that have to be different, about he's focusing too much on his mechanics that have changed. And we'll see what happens. You know, I mean, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be part of that rotation the rest of the year. I realize they're a better team. They're, what, two under 500 right now. Mm-hmm. You forget about the wild card and everything else. They're just a better team overall. But again, this is not a contention year. So you can see what you have. This is what the time of the rebuild is for, to see who fits where. Because eventually, when you get guys healthy and you get to the contending windows, you're not going to have room for 9 starters. So some of these guys end up being relievers or being traded. So this gives you a time to look at these guys and see what you have. I mean, Lopez has the stuff. He's just got to, you know, perform once he's out there.
I'm glad you underlined that, Mark, the idea that this is not a contention year. They're 12 back in the division. They're 6 back in the wild card. What is then going to determine their approach to this trade deadline? If it shouldn't be wins and losses yet.
No, I think it's different in the sense that there's no one they have to trade. And you know what I mean by have to trade, like expiring contracts or guys they can get good returns for. I think there are guys that will draw interest. I mean, the biggest one is going to be Alex Colome, who is having a great year and already was a proven closer, you know, led the American League in saves 2 years ago, I believe it was, when he was still with Tampa Bay. So there's going to be some first division teams, some, you know, division leaders that want Alex Colome. But the way I look at it is, you know, Rick Hahn can listen, and he will listen, of course, but he can ask for a little more maybe than what the average trade market would dictate. And with the, you know, contractual control of Colome next year, you don't have to trade him. You can keep him, and you can actually, you know, look at him as someone who anchors the bullpen for a couple years to come if you want to go in that direction. So there are guys like Colome and Leury Garcia. I don't think Jose Abreu is going anywhere. James McCann, who there's control over all three of those guys, not Abreu, Garcia, Colome, and McCann. So So you don't have to trade them. You can keep them and make them a part of your, you know, if not just short-term future, longer-term future. But you're certainly going to listen to everything that's put out there. In terms of adding, it's only going to be guys who, you know, there's no short-term ads. As Rick Hahn has stated probably literally 50 times at this point, the goal of this rebuild was not to say, hey, look, in 2019 we jumped up and contended for the second wild card, or we snuck in and got the second wild card. That's not the goal. The goal is to win multiple division titles and contend for multiple World Series titles. So they're not going to change anything in the short term because, you know, honestly, the season has been better probably than what they thought wins and losses wise.
Yeah, you know, how great would it be if Zach Collins were further along in his development? Because, you know, on a team that has a guy locked and loaded at a position and ready to go, James McCann has got the trade him right now light flashing on him. You know, for a guy who is, he's locked in some improvements, he's having a career year, he makes an all-star team. It would set up so ideally if he were roadblocking a prospect on the come. You know, it's too bad it hasn't quite timed up correctly for them.
Right, and I think, you know, I understand what you're saying. That certainly does make sense because, you know, James McCann's numbers are going to be a great deal better than probably anything he's really put up before with Detroit. But in the same sense, maybe he's found something that they can play out long term. I understand what you're saying about Collins, and I think, again, going back to what we said about Lopez, this is going to be a chance, you know, in the second half for Collins to show what he has, where he fits. Is he going to be, you know, kind of that amalgamation of catcher, first baseman, DH? Is he the catcher of the future? I don't know if they'll be able to decide that just in the last, you know, July, August, September here in 2019. But they'll have a better idea of what they have as he plays more. And I think he'll get more chances as the second half comes around. And right now I know fans are, you know, kind of want to see him more, but I think they're using him wisely and picking the matchups and they'll see what you have from him. You know, he's shown to be a good on-base guy. He's improved his defense, improved his game calling, and, you know, hasn't had a great start at the major league level. But like I said, he'll get the at-bats to prove what he can do.
Talking about the White Sox with Scott Merkin of MLB.com. He covers the squad. I wonder, Merk, I know Rick Hahn talked a little bit about this, but I wonder how much more you know. They've been racked with injuries on the pitching side of things from the very top to the very bottom of the organization. Is there something going on? Is this all just bad luck or comeuppance from 20 years of keeping pitchers healthier than any other franchise? What's the deal, man?
Yeah, I think it's just bad luck. I don't think there's anything they're doing in particular. I mean, I know they're not doing anything in particular that leads to this. I think it's just the way that's happened. You know, there's just more and more Tommy John surgeries in the game, it seems. And I think for the White Sox, they've just all hit in a glut. And I guess, you know, if you look at it in one sense, it's the timing is not horrible for them because these guys should be healthy and should be ready, you know, full swing. You know, for instance, Kopech, he's going to come back next year. He should, barring a setback, start the season as part of the White Sox rotation in 2020. But I would guess there'll still be some limitations on him coming back in his first full season from, you know, missing with Tommy John. But 2021, when really is the, you know, the prime contention window kind of open full swing, he'll be ready to go. And Dane Dunning could be close to ready to go. Carlos Rodon could be ready. So it's bad that it's, you know, it's been kind of, you know, turn your head away because here comes another injury sort of thing this year. But the timing of it is not horrible because these guys will be ready to go when the Sox are kind of ready to go.
How much talk is there about the work that Omar Vizquel is doing in the Southern League? Because when you start talking to baseball people about the next wave of managers, about the managerial prospects, his name keeps coming up.
Oh yeah, I mean he's one of the great players of our time, right, Dan? I mean, he was, you know, near 3,000 hits, a defensive whiz, really understood the game. I covered him a couple years at the White Sox, and you could see, I didn't cover Ozzie Guillen when he was a player, but people used to talk about that you could see him as a manager even when he was a player, and the same sense with Vizquel. And you know, he's done a great job. There's a reason they're moving him with kind of the top prospects. He's done a great job handling them, and they speak very highly of him. But, you know, let's not overlook what the White Sox staff has done right now. I get that whatever manager is in the seat is going to be not the manager fans want at that time. You know, he bunts too much, or he does this, or he sticks with this pitcher too long. But I think the players really have responded to Rick Renteria and their staff. And, you know, I'm not sure what Vizquel's future is going to be, but I think Rick Renteria is the guy who's going to run this team for the foreseeable future and has kind of established a culture in that organization that they wanted from top to bottom. He's bilingual, which of course also is Vizquel is also. And I think he's changed the culture because they've changed kind of the players they have in the organization too, and going a little younger in the rebuild. But I like what he's done. And you're talking about another guy with, you know, managerial qualities. How about Joe McEwing, who's interviewed a few times for jobs and does a great job as the bench coach for the White Sox. So there's a lot of different options. But I understand Vizquel is very highly thought of and very highly thought of around baseball. So it may be a situation where, you know, he ends up getting a managerial opportunity somewhere outside of the White Sox organization.
Merck, White Sox fans would yell and scream if I didn't ask you about two kids down on the farm. Neither Nick Madrigal nor Luis Robert are on the 40-man, but they are absolutely tearing up Double-A Birmingham. I don't think they make the major leagues this season. I doubt you do either, but is there a chance they're three-level guys and get a peek next year?
You know, I had actually thought at the start of the season, from what I've heard, because of his collegiate experience, that Nick Madrigal might get a look at the end of this year. And he's certainly, you know, tearing it up at Birmingham right now. And Luis Robert's numbers are out of this world just across minor leagues this year. And just as a minor leaguer with the White Sox, I really believe that he's going to be, you know, the best all-around prospect they have out of this group, this, you know, great group that they've amassed. I think, you know, they definitely could be three-level guys this year, and they definitely, there's a chance they could start next season with the team. You know, I mean, you think about it, and nothing against the guys they have there now, but why not give them a chance this year? I understand the contractual ramifications and everything else, but why not see what they can do over the last, you know, 6 weeks of the season? The only thing you basically cost them is a chance for Rookie of the Year, right, in 2020. And they can kind of play through their flaws up here right now and be ready to go in 2020 once the season begins. I mean, you see them play. I don't claim to be a scout or a GM or anything else, but you watch them in action and you can see these guys have major league talent right now. Now, you know, it's up to the Sox to decide when they're here, but I think they could handle, you know, being up in the major leagues at this moment.
Merck, thanks, man. We appreciate it. That's a lot of good stuff.
Okay, guys, take care.
That is Scott Merkin, the White Sox beat writer for MLB.com. We've got more baseball, and if you missed the Theo Epstein appearance in the 2 o'clock on Wednesday. What's today, Friday? I'm all mixed up.
Yeah, Friday.
And it was as powerful.
Seminal?
As powerful an appearance, an on-air appearance, that I've heard from a sports executive in this city in memory. Of how direct, of how candid, and how anxious he actually seems about the performance of his baseball team. And there were direct questions, there were direct answers, and I used this phrase before, there were no uncertain terms that came on these airways from the Cubs president of baseball operations. We should revisit it because it must continue to inform everything we're talking about with the Cubs right now. Despite the big win yesterday and all of the fireworks around Joe Maddon, the Cubs remain a team that is in a precarious position.
Theo Epstein, in his own words, when we come back, it's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
So, your Sox math winner, the answer from game one is 30. Three Sox to the All-Star game, 27, says Riles, 23, and you are the winner. Here's your prize shelf, Rubik's Cube, Headless Gnome, and some Sox, a Sox hat, Paul Canerico, and
a
White Sox yearbook.
The mints, and yeah, that's the White Sox from 1990 to 99. That one's been there for a bit.
It's a great decade.
I think it got here in 2001.
Do we still have that Gene Honda baseball from year one? Or no, Connor McKnight signed Altoids?
That was also here for a while.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bernstein, McKnight, Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's a steamy day and apparently a self-declared Chicago holiday.
Nobody working.
We're here. We're working. We're hanging. And it was fascinating to hear Theo Epstein speak about the state of his team right before his team went out and blew a game in really demoralizing fashion. Oh. It felt like rock bottom at the time, and it was despite all the stuff he said.
Yeah, so we'll pick it up from Mack and Parkins just a couple of days ago. They had Theo on, and the conversation begins here at a pretty crucial part where Theo explains that if they keep playing the way that they're playing, they may have to change some things around completely.
You know, we're all really frustrated, obviously, and it's a stretch of play that nobody's proud of, and nor should anybody be. So, you know, it's hard. But I think you find out a lot about what people are made of during stretches like these, and it obviously can't continue. It's not acceptable, but you know, there've been too many words about it and not enough action. So nothing I could say, especially on a radio interview, is really going to make it better. I think it's incumbent on all of us to, find ways out of it. And obviously on our end, that's, you know, a big part of that is transactional. And this is the time of year to do that. So we're working on that end of it. Change is obviously called for if we keep playing like this. But there's opportunities for everyone to do better. Every player, every coach, everyone associated with what we're doing right now is not satisfactory. And I think there definitely is that realization, you know, being around the team and guys are disgusted and working hard to change and improve.
Is there something in particular that is more disturbing than other things? Because a lot of what we've seen, Theo, is just it's not your baseball team that we're used to seeing, fundamentals that are not being deployed on a regular basis. With anything in particular?
Yeah, that's fair. That's really fair. It's way sloppier than we're used to, and like we come out of the chute sloppy. Like from the first inning, our first innings have been terrible. You know, so we're going down, you know, 1-2-3 without a fight with you know, less than 10 pitches and letting the opponent really get into a good rhythm early. And then we're sort of making a lot of mental errors early and getting ourselves in a hole and then not fighting back. There hasn't been, you know, the normal amount of fight that we're used to seeing. You know, we didn't have a ton of comebacks and a lot of these games have been over and, just kind of turn the page to the next day and try to do better, but that's not us. It's not good enough. It's certainly not good enough, you know, in a competitive NL Central National League. So I think it's just that, you know, that you identified just the sloppiness and the mental errors and the lack of fight. It's like we don't have our real identity right now that we do have, or that we it looks like we have. It isn't a good one. It's not a winning one. With the way we're playing right now. So that has to bother you, and it does.
What can be done about it?
Well, I mean, these things can turn around. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what can be done. I mean, I think we focus on, individually asking our guys to be their best selves, you know, be their best selves with their preparation, physical standpoint, fundamentally, and then especially in times like these, from a mental standpoint, so they can A, play better, and B, be there to sort of pick up their teammates better. You know, one thing we haven't been doing is playing great like team baseball, and it's hard when you're losing. But the sort of team concept is really important, and when that's lacking, it's hard to have the kind of energy you need to turn things around. So I think everyone individually be their best selves. It starts there. That's obviously easier said than done, and then. Yeah, you know, change some things in the environment. Joe had a meeting yesterday and sort of went into some detail about some things that can be done. Players, I know from one-on-one conversations with them, they're trying different things and talking to one another about approaching things a little bit differently. So there is a lot of change being attempted behind the scenes. It's not you know, these not the types of things we can go into great detail and talking about publicly, because it kind of ruins it. And the bottom line is it hasn't worked yet. So
right.
I'm not sure it's been real effective. But no, it's not. I mean, it's not as if everyone's showing up just trying the same thing over and over again every day. That's for sure. And then from a roster standpoint, you know, we've got some areas that haven't been as productive as we would have expected. You know, even areas going into the season where we were, you know, 2, 3, 4 deep with players that we felt could hold down a position like second base, for example. You know, we were like incredibly deep, and we haven't gotten for one reason or another the production we're looking for out of anybody. So there's a there's some sense to being patient. And you know, when you have multiple options, it's like anyone who can step forward and be really productive and be a good solution. But when it doesn't happen, obviously at some point you have to start to shuffle the deck and make changes. And working aggressively behind the scenes to try to make some changes. If we don't snap out of this, a lot of change is called for. That's obvious.
Hey, Theo, we're going to either reestablish or ask you to not walk around the office if that's what's going on, because the cell connection is going in and out. Are you walking right now? Are you getting some exercise, or is it just a bad connection here?
It might just be a bad connection.
Okay, well, that sounds great right there.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
That sounds perfect right there. When during your conversations with Jed and everybody on your staff, and you talk about what you've got and what you want, and there's a lot of needs right now. What are those things you need to see over the next 4 weeks before you decide to pick a lane on buy, sell, or sit on your hands?
Well, I don't think sit on our hands is really a really viable option, because if we want to be in a position to have enough belief that we're looking to aggressively add and sort of polish up what we feel can be a championship team. If we're not, that means that this stretch of bad play has continued. And if the stretch of bad play continues, then certainly a ton of change for changes is in order, because it'll have been a long stretch of unacceptable play. And then I'm sure your fans are sitting there listening to this saying, well, what about the change to spur us to play better? And that's certainly on the table too, and we're looking at those types of deals too. Unfortunately, you can't just press a button and make deals and deals that fit your club and that would have a chance to work. But I think certainly between now and July 31st, if we haven't started to play better, even if we have in some areas, change to shore up the weak spots in the roster after a healthy amount of patience is called for, and change to just change the environment might be called for. The change is a catalyst. There are lots of different areas. I mean, you guys can read the stat sheet and see what positions we're not getting production from. And certainly this is just on a production basis, the thinnest, worst bench and the worst depth that we've had since we've been here. And it's been a calling card of ours to have, a lot of quality depth. And no matter who gets hurt, no matter who gets a day off, you're always throwing someone in the lineup who can really produce, and that has not been the case this year. And with some of the guys, it's been a head scratcher. But you get to the All-Star break, and it's that way, and you have to accept it for what it is, and try to improve it.
We're talking to Cubs President of Baseball Operations Theo Epstein, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. So it sounds like anything and everything is on the table. And I'll be honest, I'm interested in the fact that you said maybe change for change's sake in terms of culture, because that maybe suggests that it might not just be the roster that needs changing.
No, I didn't. Well, I did not say change for change's sake as far as the culture. Those are your words, not mine. But I think, with the environment, like if we just keep doing the same thing over and over again, if this is truly how this group of human beings is going to, all of us collectively are going to sort of interact and produce, and it's not good enough, then yes, then we have to consider change for change's sake. I think change to improve and to sort of add depth and get a better lineup out there and is the best kind of change. But yeah, we're definitely underachieving right now, right? I mean, the way that we all are collectively doing our jobs as Cubs and showing up and trying to produce and be a team and make sure the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and that's not functioning right now in an acceptable manner. So yeah, I mean, we're of course looking at every possible lever that we can change and improve. And as I alluded to earlier, a lot of those things are going on behind the scenes, and trying to interact with each other in different ways, trying to be the best version of ourselves so that we can be there, to produce and for each other, and a lot of those types of things. But yeah, at some point, obviously a different mix. You call up a new player, and we are making a transaction today. I don't know if it's out yet or not, but we're an option, Dylan Maples, and call up Robel Garcia, just to be another option for us. He's a switch hitter, with a ton of power, can really turn around a fastball, play second base, he can play third base. And we've had him the last week playing left field just to increase his versatility. We think he's someone who could, you know, runs into the right kind of stretch to really help the offense. And we think his bat has a chance to play off the bench. And the bottom line is like, that's an example of someone who could help us. It's not, you know, it's not a move we envisioned at the beginning of the year, but he's had a hell of a AAA season, swinging the bat really well, and he hits, you know, velocity and four seamers that we have, you know, we haven't been doing lately. So there's a chance that he can help us, and that's, you know, I think that just is a product of us trying to look a little bit more aggressively. You know, you look through different lenses given what's going on with your team at different times of the year, and right now, given the way we've played, I think we'd be negligent if we weren't looking through a more proactive lens. And, you know, this is an easy one. He's played well. He's improved his versatility. I think he could potentially help us, you know, in the lineup on a given day, and he could potentially help us off the bench. So that seemed like an appropriate thing to do at this time. But, you know, that's just obviously step one. I think we have to continue to try to be proactive to create the right kind of change around here. What's going on,
Theo? We've heard you under duress questions about life issues like domestic abuse and bigotry, mm-hmm. and other things. This is as dejected as I've ever heard you when talking about your baseball team. Is this a new low right now?
I'm not dejected. I think we're all extremely frustrated, and it doesn't make sense to be irrationally optimistic about what's transpiring. I actually am really optimistic about our ability to fix it, and because I think there's just too much talent and too much track record and too many possibilities with this team for us to define ourselves as this. I do not think that's going to happen. But you also have to be realistic, honest, candid, transparent about what's transpired. And you know, I'm not gonna you know, walk down the street, you know, humming my favorite songs and you know, sort of breathing in the fresh summer air while the team is playing like this. Not only you're going to find anyone around the team in a good mood right now, you shouldn't, because this is, you know, we're not putting a product on the field lately that's satisfactory, that is worthy of the fan support that we get, that's worthy of the investment that, you know, the Ricketts have made. And it's just not up to our own standard. It's not up to the standard of the players in uniform who've played so hard to establish the Cubs as, you know, an elite team in Major League Baseball with a certain set of expectations. They all know that. I know it, and you know it. So why would we BS around it and pretend like it's just a, you know, it's just a little bit of a, you know, a tough road trip? It's obviously more than that. We're not getting the job done right now, but I am very optimistic about where we're going. It's just, I don't quite know how we're going to get there yet, but I know we are going to get there.
Theo, Joe was on the station yesterday, and he said that how the team is playing is a reflection on him. And clearly, by your words, you all share in this, right? Management, Joe, players.
Of course.
But,
yeah.
but I'm curious specifically, how do you think Joe's doing through all of this?
But I'd just rather lump us in collectively. Like, I think everyone associated with the Cubs, you know, the product on the field right now is not doing an adequate job, because this it's not a short stretch of play. It's a natural part of the baseball season. It's a long stretch where we haven't even begun to answer the bell. So I think all of us haven't gotten the job done. And we're all searching for ways to do that. And I think, you know, Joe is a unique challenge too, because he's it's his fifth year with this team, and he's remarkably consistent. But, you know, we all contribute to the environment, including the manager. And so when players aren't responding to the environment, I think sometimes you have to sort of do the impossible, which is try to find a new approach and new ways to reach guys while also maintaining one of your greatest strengths, which is your consistency and your ability to be the same guy whether things are going well or going poorly. So he's got a unique challenge right now, and we all have unique challenges. You know, with this roster, there's just a lot of underperformance and some uncharacteristic soft spots that are our fault that we haven't typically had, and that we have to track midstream. The soft spots aren't where we thought they were going to be, quite honestly, on this roster. So we just deal with that. Everyone's got things that they can do better around here, for sure. And Joe's doing a lot right, too. But nobody associated with this team is feels like they're doing the job right now, that's for sure.
In terms of reinforcements that maybe could come from guys that are under contract, who's more likely to play for you guys again this year, Brandon Morrow or Ben Zobrist?
I think they both will. There's no health limitation with him, and I know he's there is a bit of a plan in place, even though it may be a tentative one, where we're sort of have an understanding of the timetable that we'll see him at some point return. Not liberty to talk about it, but as we shared, I think about a month ago, we are hopeful that he's going to return and be able to help us down the stretch and hopefully beyond. So I believe that's coming. It's not something that's going to address our immediate needs right now. And then Morrow's feeling pretty good and throwing all his pitches aggressively off the mound in side sessions. And that story will be told by how his arm responds when he wraps it up and gets back into game action. So I'm not going to sit here and play Jimmy the Greek for you on that one, but I hope that both guys help us.
That's Theo Epstein, Cubs president of baseball operations, in a wide-ranging and deeply felt appearance
on
Sports Radio 670 with McNeil and Parkins on Wednesday afternoon, after which the Cubs proceeded to take that advice to heed and wet the bed in one of their worst losses of the year.
Wow. Rough one, yeah, an absolutely rough one. But a win yesterday, and Robel Garcia got yourself a couple of big ABs and a big debut.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And this hour is brought to you by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouthwatering water. Midday Midway coming up. I've got why it's a bad time to be a green iguana in Florida and a way that you're not supposed to fish that runs afoul of the law.
New product for your weekend and another sign of the pending apocalypse. The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The first half or the second half, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The first portion of this Bernstein and McKnight show has been dedicated mostly to baseball. Some fireworks for the Cubs at PNC Park. Joe Maddon getting angry about how often the tower is being buzzed, and that's before David Bodie gets hit. But the fact that the Cubs won in convincing fashion and Robel Garcia announced his presence with authority is not reason to believe that the current issues with the Cubs are in any way fixed. So we concentrated on that as well. Connor McKnight brought up the possibility, did not advocate for, but just brought up a scenario in which the Cubs would trade a core foundational player and who it would likely be at this point. And we settled on it being Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, really what it is just kind of watching the fire and poking at it, seeing like where it collapses, and then there you rebuild from there. You know, you built fires before, you understand how that goes.
You've seen me do it.
Kind of see, oh man, that was an incredible night. The Scorehouse, I miss it so much. Oh, we talked White Sox too. We re-celebrated Dylan Cease Day with Scott Merkin of MLB.com, just kind of bathed in the glory that is another prospect arriving at the major league level. And I was really interested to hear Merk say this. He didn't rule out the possibility of Nick Madrigal maybe playing a little big league ball this year. Thought that was fun. So, sign of the apocalypse. We always keep an eye out for these on the midday midway. Cockroaches have apparently begun to develop a cross resistance to powerful insecticides.
Yeah.
Scientists from Purdue exposed German cockroaches to different insecticides. They found that the populations not only developed, this is the best part, not only developed a resistance to the insecticide they were exposed to, but also picked up resistances to other insecticides. These super immune insects can then pass their resistance on to their offspring, making it only a matter of time before,
before the
insect population becomes essentially insecticide proof. This is a previously unrealized challenge in cockroaches, says Michael Scharf of Purdue University, who knows something of unrealized challenges and cockroaches. They're developing resistance to multiple classes of insecticides, and it's make controlling them almost impossible.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
This from Underwood, Minnesota. A Twin Cities area man is facing charges after he was arrested for fishing naked in West Central Minnesota.
Don't see the problem.
I got a little worried here because I've been following Schmutzy on Twitter.
Okay.
And this is his annual camping trip up to Minnesota.
Oh, boy.
And I was a little, and you know, he's kind of out on his own. He's sending a picture of a nice smallmouth he caught. He sent a picture of a nice walleye that he caught.
Okay.
My first thought was a naked Schmutzy, which is never, ever a good first thought, second, or third thought. But no. The Sheriff's Department in Otter Tail County, Keith Van Dyke, said deputies received a call July 1st from people living on North Turtle Lake that 59-year-old Michael Blake was fishing naked from his pontoon boat about 50 feet from shore. Van Dyke said summer homes line the lake, but Blake of Brooklyn Center told responding deputies he didn't think anyone was around, so fishing naked wouldn't be a problem. Van Dyke said Blake has been charged with gross misdemeanor indecent exposure.
Oh.
I bet. So, there's houses all over the place. How do you know if people are around or not, first of all?
Well, I guess you kind of have to assume, right?
Yeah. And on a pontoon boat, so you're elevated.
That's the tough part.
Right?
Yeah, you're fishing from the pontoon boat.
I hate fishing from pontoon boats.
It doesn't really work out.
Too far from the surface of the water.
Even the pontoons that are like created to fish off of, they're no good. The best you can do is like throw a couple of lines out the back and troll for walleye, but that's not a fun thing to do.
The angles are all bad. I've never dealt with it well, but it's a, you know, I think
we you ever did, fish naked?
I have not.
Really?
Look, you see me when I come back from fishing. I've got cuts all over me.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're catching fish with teeth or fish with, you know, the sharp spines and everything.
Well, if you're like me, you know you're not going to catch anything anyway. So all you got to worry about is the hook at the end of the thing.
I've had enough cuts on fingers and arms and legs and enough incidents to know better than to fish naked.
Try it. Give it a shot.
No, thank you.
Here's something everyone knew, but now it's nice to hear it out loud. The former governor of Rio de Janeiro reportedly told a judge in court Thursday that he paid $2 million to secure votes of the Olympic Committee members in order to ensure that the city would host the 2016 Summer Olympics. Yeah, I know. Everyone knew this. Everyone knew this. Remember, congratulations, Mayor Daley? That was the 2016 Summer Olympics. Those were the games that Chicago had put in a bid to get, right? We privatized parking. We spent the whole deal. That was a great thing. According to Reuters, Sergio Cabral said he paid the money to Lamine Diok, the former president of the International Association of Athletics Federation. That's the IAAF, who used it to then influence votes and bought the Olympics for Rio de Janeiro. Every now and again, it's nice to hear something. You knew this. Nice to hear it out loud.
You don't usually hear a conservation commission or government officials speaking about an animal in this way.
Okay.
So this was new to me. But Florida's Conservation Commission is encouraging homeowners to kill green iguanas, quote, whenever possible, unquote.
It's a kill order.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's one thing if they say go into the swamps or they're hiring snake hunters to find the pythons. That's been a project for a while. They should also kill all the feral cats as well when they can.
Probably those, yeah.
Which is an even bigger problem than the pythons. But those are specific, you know, they're targeting people, or the lionfish that are off the coast of Florida, and they're having derbies to go spearfish the lionfish and prepare them in ceviches, etc. This is different. It's because of all the damage they're causing. The Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission that protects crocodiles places strict guidelines on hunting deer. Has put the scaly yard-long or more creature as the green iguana
a
on...
A yard-long?
Oh, yeah. It has put it on its hit list.
Wow.
The commission issued a directive describing the green iguana as an invasive species, citing damage they wreak on seawalls, sidewalks, and plants. The iguanas are protected only by anti-cruelty law. Homeowners need not worry about permission to kill them. Here's the quote. The commission encourages homeowners to kill green iguanas on their own property whenever possible. Iguanas can also be killed year-round and without a permit on 22 public lands.
And with extreme prejudice.
In South Florida, right? They can grow to over 5 feet in length and weigh up to 17 pounds. They live a decade of the wild and can last twice that long in captivity. So have at it. Go get them. Saying what's happening is they're destroying agriculture, they undermine roads, they cause electrical transformers to fail, they can transmit salmonella and be an FAA safety hazard.
Well, forget the next scorehouse trip. We got to go to Florida and kill us some iguanas. We don't need a sports trip or anything. We just go out there and everybody takes shifts killing iguanas.
And before you ask, yes.
You can eat it?
Yes.
All right.
Yep. Andrew Zimmern has done it on his show. I've watched him do it. That the tail meat is a nice white meat, and absolutely, they can be eaten. So that would be the next thing, just like they've done with the lionfish. You know, start coming up with your recipes, start preparing your fricassees.
Same thing they did with Chilean sea bass. They had the Patagonian toothfish. They wanted to get rid of it, so they renamed it and repackaged it into a whole bunch of different food.
Get used to that as the climate is changing, as we are changing our climate and commercial fishing patterns are changing. You're going to have all kinds of new, quote-unquote, sea basses that are going to arrive.
Iguana fingers at the ballpark. We're going to be eating those.
Yep.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. When we come back, our regular Friday 11 o'clock guest, Jonah Carey, is going to join us. We're going to talk baseball with him, see what he makes of a conversation that the Cubs have been having from top to bottom. Talk about Dylan Cease's debut and take a look around the league, too. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.